2015 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a question and answer session towards the end of today's prepared remarks, at which time, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star one on your telephone. If at any time during the call you require audio assistance, feel free to press star zero and a conference coordinator will be happy to assist you. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to your hostess for today's conference, Bisera Grubesic, Investor Relations Officer. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon and welcome to our conference call, during which we will discuss our operational highlights and financial results for the second quarter of 2014. With me today are Harold Goddijn, our CEO, and Marina Wyatt, our CFO. You can also listen to the call on our website, and a recording of the call will be available shortly afterwards. And as usually, I would like to point out that Safe Harbor applies. We will start today's call with Harold, who will discuss the key operational developments, followed by a more detailed look at the quarterly financial results from Marina. We will then take your questions, and this call will finish at 4:23 CET. And with that, Harold, I would like to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Bisera, and good morning, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on today's earnings call. We reported both revenue growth and a higher EBIT for the second quarter in a row. Group revenue was €252 million in the quarter, which is a 1% increase year on year, and the gross margin was strong at 56%. We delivered EBIT of €10 million, and adjusted earnings per share of €0.08. Marina will provide further information on the financials. I will now discuss some of the key operational highlights, and I will do that per business unit. So let's have a look at consumer first. The consumer business performed well. And if you exclude some automotive-related hardware, the revenue grew for the second consecutive quarter. European P&D business was strong. We gained market share and improved our average selling price. Our North American market share was approximately 15% in the quarter, and we saw fairly stable ASPs. During the quarter, we completed the rationalization of the entire P&D range into our NavKit software platform, with the introduction of the entry-level Go devices. All NavKit-based TomTom devices will now offer lifetime maps and lifetime traffic services and will benefit further from continuous investments into our navigation platform. In sport, we more than doubled our revenue in the quarter. The success of our cardio GPS sport watches, which is available now in 26 countries, was the main driver behind this growth. We launched an above-the-line international marketing campaign for cardio GPS sport watches in June, and that campaign is still running. Now move on to our automotive business units. We're making good progress in the delivering of a complete set of leading connected navigation system components to our OEMs, and that is reflected in the record number of quotations we've been involved in during the first half of the year. We started shipping a new navigation system to Daimler. This is an in-dash product that is developed in partnership with Renault, and we will equip the new smart car. It has a 7-inch capacitive touchscreen and features TomTom Maps navigation software and real-time traffic services. In China, we started to supply Audi with real-time traffic information. We also extended our traffic coverage geographically to Turkey. TomTom traffic is now available in 37 countries. Our new map-making platform puts TomTom in a leading position to provide advanced map features required for highly automated driving purposes, where freshness and quality are key. We are upgrading our entire mobile mapping fleet with laser sensors and high-resolution cameras, and we started to capture data for the next generation of detailed, high-quality map features. In addition, we launched the Advanced Driver Assistance Interface Specifications Toolkit, and that helps our customers for robust benchmarking and on-road testing for new applications such as adaptive cruise control, eco-driving and assisted braking. The toolkit enables our car OEM customers to create applications that generate energy savings, increase performance and improve safety. As I said earlier, we're enjoying keen interest from OEs and Tier 1s for our platform and for our technologies, which resulted in record number of quotations and also much closer cooperation with key players in the industry. Within licensing, we entered into a partnership with MapQuest to power core mapping services across all their digital assets, including MapQuest.com and its smartphone and tablet applications. Let's move on to maps. So we continue to make good progress in the development of our new real-time mapping platform, and we expect to have substantially completed that platform by the end of 2014. The first pilots are being made available to customers, support Multinet R map formats, and they're currently being tested. We have a long heritage and experience in combining multiple resources in the map-making process. And in the new map-making world, we will combine professional map-making with crowdsourcing to deliver freshness and quality. Our new map is continuously releasable and processes sensor and crowdsourced data from our own and from our customers' applications in near real time. Our overall objective is to deliver better maps faster and at lower cost. So the next slide for telematics. Let's move on to our fleet management business. We continued to accelerate growth in telematics in the second quarter. The number of subscriptions increased by 47% year on year, and we reached 395,000 customers by the end of the second quarter. We completed our second acquisition of DAMS Tracking, and we increased, as a result of that, the installed base with 27,000 vehicles. That happened in June. We also announced a partnership with Allianz to launch a customer telematics car insurance product. And this partnership underpins that telematics is a reliable technology partner, not only for fleet management, but also for the insurance industry. Our software as a service business applications allow insurance companies to create innovative products and services to help people drive greener, safer and more efficiently. Our WebFleet platform sets new standards for businesses and developers to build innovative end-to-end business processes, and our open API strategy clearly delivers more possibilities for our partners to grow. We recently had our first telematics developer conference in May, and over 120 partners joined us to share and promote their WebFleet-based software solutions. This concludes my part of the presentation. I'm now handing over to Marina for a more detailed view on the financials.
Thank you, Harold. I will now review the financial results. So overall revenue grew by 1%, and we saw strong growth from telematics, which was partly offset by a small decrease in consumer and in licensing. Consumer revenue decreased by 2% year on year to €169 million. However, excluding automotive hardware revenue, which we include within consumer, consumer showed growth for the second consecutive quarter. And this was driven by the performance of European P&Ds and also by sport revenue. The EMEA P&D market showed a slightly lower level of decline than we had seen previously at around 11%. In EMEA, our market share was 52%, which was a percentage point higher than last year in the same quarter. We estimate our North American market share for the second quarter at around 15%, and this market was 24% smaller than in the prior year. Sports revenue more than doubled in the second quarter and we expect this growth rate to continue, fueled in part by the contribution from new products such as our cardio watch. Automotive revenue was €31 million in the second quarter, which was slightly up on last year. Licensing revenue was €2 million lower compared to last year, which mainly resulted from the phasing out of a major contract in the second quarter of last year. And we also saw some level of growth from our GIS group within licensing. Telematics revenue grew by 29% year on year, and the Webfleet installed base increased by 47% year on year and 27% organically. Recurring subscription revenue grew by 36% year on year. Our gross margin increased to 56%, and this was mainly due to higher margins on some of our hardware products, and partly due to the strengthening of the euro against the dollar, the US dollar. Total operating expenses for the quarter were €130 million, which was €10 million higher year on year. And this increase was the result of higher marketing expenses because of the advertising campaigns launched around the cardio watch and traffic, which started towards the end of the second quarter. EBIT for the quarter was €10 million, and we delivered a net result of €9 million, which translated into adjusted EPS of €0.08. We finished the quarter with a net cash position of €51 million. We generated €33 million from operating activities. Capital investments for the quarter were €27 million, and they largely related to investments in our new map production platform, our navigation engine, customer-specific automotive projects, and also the recent acquisitions in telematics. Given our solid second quarter results, if we look at our outlook for the full year now, we're increasing our full year outlook for 2014. We now expect revenue of at least €925 million and adjusted earnings per share of at least €0.25. Our previous guidance was for revenue of at least €900 million and adjusted earnings per share of around €0.25. And we also continue to reiterate that we expect our gross margin to stay strong. We will maintain tight control on operating costs, and we expect capital investments of more than €100 million this year. And overall, we expect to increase our net cash position for the year as a whole. Operator, we would now like to start with the Q&A session, please.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question at this time, please press the star or star followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue again by pressing star 2. We will now take our first question from Youssef Issa of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. So it's regarding telematics. Thanks for also giving us a little bit more detail on the drivers of this division. Could you tell us a little bit why the ARPU has been trending down? Has it been because of increased competition from Fleetmatics and a few others being aggressive in Europe, or is it more a regional mix or more client mix?
So Youssef, thank you for the question. The ARPU is mostly intact, but the discrepancy between growth on the top line and the number of installed bases is mostly a result of the acquisitions, which did not contribute the whole year. So it's a timing issue there. Second element is that we started to bundle some hardware with some of the product offerings in telematics, so you don't see that translated in immediately into top-line growth. And I think thirdly, there was a foreign exchange effect.
Yeah, and when we just, if I can just add to that, when we look at ARPUs, It is a blended ARPU across the subscriptions. And, you know, behind that there are ARPUs on direct sales, ARPUs on sales that are made via partners. And, you know, behind the scenes we look at each of those indicators. So what you see here is a blend, but actually when you, and that's caused by the fact that there are relatively more sales via partners made in the quarter relative to the comparator period. So that's what affects it. When you actually strip that away, the underlying ARPUs are pretty stable. So, you know, what you should not take away from here is that ARPUs are going down, because actually it's just a blended mix.
Okay, and do you expect that there will be the mix that you had this quarter between direct sales and through distributors, do you expect it to remain the same, or is it going to continue to fluctuate and we're going to see this metric change more or less every quarter?
Yeah, there will be a little bit of fluctuation between the quarters. That's, you know, we've tried to balance the fact that we want to give you a bit more disclosure now, but without going into, you know, more detail than makes sense to do. So there will be a bit of fluctuation. I think, you know, the question to ask is really what's going on with the underlying ARPU underneath that, and, you know, what we can say about this quarter is it's stable.
Okay, thank you. If I can, just a quick follow-up on the consumer division. You mentioned in one of the slides that you will be expanding the product ranges. Do you mean staying with cardio and broadening the portfolio, or do you have in mind more type of consumer devices? And if you can tell us more on the timing of these, if that's the case. Thank you.
Yeah, so we are successful in sports. Marina said it, we doubled our revenue in the first half. We expect that to happen again in the second half. We made good inroads with the new products. We will continue to innovate in that space. And I would define that as the sports segment. What it is exactly what we are going to do, I want to keep it under wraps for the moment, but expect new products to come from TomTom this year and next.
Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Marc Hesselink of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. First question is on the P&D. In the last conference call, you talked about that inventories were very lean in P&D. What do you see there at the moment? And then secondly, obviously you talked a bit already on marketing costs being up. But you see that that you started the campaign in June, so do you expect those costs to further accelerate over the remainder of the year? And then related to that, previously you said that SG&A costs would be down year over year. Is that still the target?
Okay, so three questions there. If I deal with the OPEX ones first. So what's happened this year is that we have, you know, run a above-the-line campaign in marketing, which started in Q2. And as a result of that, our marketing spend in Q2 is, you know, significantly higher than it was last year and higher than last quarter. That campaign, so we're running campaigns around traffic and also around the cardio watch. And that campaign will run into Q3 as well. So you'll see a continued higher than normal run rate level of marketing spend through Q3. In the second half of the year, you know, in general, marketing spend will be relatively high. As currently planned, I would expect marketing overall to be slightly higher than last year, spend-wise, but, you know, a bit of flexibility in that, but that's what we're expecting. Last year, we had very high spend in Q4. This year, it's more spread out through Q2, Q3, and Q4, so a little bit less lumpy than last year. On the SG&A side, for the year as a whole, you know, I'd expect there will be a slight decrease in SG&A compared with last year, yes. We are, you know, continuously, particularly in the G&A side, looking for more efficiency there. And sorry, what was the other question you asked as well?
Yeah, the final one was on the other one, was inventory in P&D. You mentioned that it was very lean in the previous quarter. What do you see there?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything really to report any differently on that. You know, the stock in the channel's in very good shape.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Andrew Humphrey of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Just one for me. Of the CapEx you highlighted this quarter, can you give us an indication of how much of that is going on specific customer projects?
It's not the largest piece of it. I mean, there is some work on both ongoing and new customer projects, and, you know, some of those customer projects have not yet hit the market, and we'll see those coming through later this year and in 2015. But, you know, that is a piece of it. There are quite a number of components, as you know, I said in the script. So, you know, it doesn't dominate it. It's a piece of it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We will now take our next question from Hans Slob of Rabobank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. First is a question about your market share in U.S. P&D. It was down in the second quarter versus Q1, while you are launching the new range of products there. Yeah, when do you expect that there will be, let's say, an improvement of your market share in the U.S., or what is holding it back? So what's really going on there? And second question is about your EBIT loss in automotive that almost doubled in the first half. Could you explain this? Why did it increase, whereas your sales were more or less stable?
Yeah, Hans, let me thank you for the question. Let me first look at the let me take the first one. U.S. P&D market is difficult. We know that. Not only from a global perspective in terms of market decline, but also our market share is below where we want to see. We have decided to at least to hold our ASPs, so we run an operation in the U.S. that is for profit, but we are not planning to aggressively regain market share, or you know, we let it go its course. It's a profitable market for us. Hopefully, with the introduction of new products, our market share will go up. But it is now part of our business that is you know, that is not as significant as it once used to be.
Okay, thanks.
And just talking about the EBIT in automotive. I mean, it's a fairly simple explanation, actually. It's really that the level of investments we are making in the MAP, as we sort of flagged at the start of this year, is higher. And the majority of the costs of the MAP in our segment note are borne by automotive and licensing. Automotive relatively has grown its revenue versus the licensing side and bears more of the cost. And that's what hits the EBIT.
Yeah, okay. And that's clear explanations. Thanks.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Shyam Kumar of TT International. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. I've got a couple of questions. First one, in terms of automated driving systems, at what point do you think automakers will start introducing more automated driving products dependent on your mapping capabilities? And if you can give any overview on how you see the development of the intimacy between automakers and mapping over the next 2 years in terms of automated driving, please.
Yeah, so, you know, highly automated driving is a long-term objective. And the success of highly automated driving will be partly dependent on technology, partly on legislation, user acceptance. So I can't predict what the end result is going to be. But in the running up to highly automated driving, we see more and more safety and convenience features connected to the map. And a couple of features that are starting to make it into the mainstream are adaptive cruise control, braking and assisted braking in front of a corner. Those systems require not always, but sometimes, reliable map content. Curvature warning, for instance, is an important element for a safety system. So that will continue step by step. We also involved in a number of research programs, so we're working closely together with industry, where we have actually cars driving in an automated way, driving with our maps. And we're learning from that, and from that we will help to get the specifications for mapping content right, and also learn how we can best produce those maps in a cost-effective way, and thirdly, how we can collect information from the car to compare what we see in real time on the road with what we have in our database and try to look for differences and change the map in an automated way as a result of that. So it's a number of items. It's mostly in the research state, but some of the features that we're now delivering also make it into the car in commercial applications.
And how do we think about the quality of your mapping and your ability to help automakers deliver that product versus your peers in the space, please?
Yeah, so we're quite excited about what we can do here, and most importantly, because we have a transactional map-making process, at least that's what we're working on, the platform that we have completed by the end of 2014, or largely completed by the end of 2014. And we think that transactional map-making is kind of critical and pivotal to get those systems up and running in a cost-effective way. That closed-loop system where you compare on a continuous basis what you observe in reality or what you have stored in the map, that requires fast transactions, automated transactions, and we're testing some of those things to great success. So we are excited because we can make better maps, but we can also make them at lower cost in a highly automated way, and that is our overall game. So I think there's some recognition also in the industry that we're on the right track there to deliver the systems for the future, and that gives us not only GEM in 2019, but it also greatly improves our chances of winning deals that are happening today that are not necessarily reliant on those features, but where car makers say, we want to invest in you in that relationship and see what we can do collectively. Because I think there is a sense that no one can deliver those systems in isolation. There's a higher degree of cooperation needed to get this done. So we are both from a technology perspective as well as from a relative position in the value chain, quite excited about those new opportunities. We are embracing them, we're working hard, and as a result of that we see greater intimacy with some of our key customers and better opportunities to win deals in the future and higher levels of activity to win current contracts that are available now. So the overall sense in the automotive team is that we are on the right track. There's some green shoots, and the sense is that this will, in the medium term, lead to higher revenues coming out of the automotive segment.
Perfect. Can I just ask, switch tack to telematics quickly? I noticed in the quarter you announced a usage-based insurance contract with Allianz. Can you actually, because this seems like a relatively new industry, usage-based insurance for consumer, and I don't have huge knowledge about it. Can you please kind of outline what you see in terms of the strategic opportunity with this, please.
Yeah. So let's first start with the interests of the insurance industry themselves. So they have a desire to differentiate between high-risk customers and low-risk customers to differentiate their pricing, but also to make safe drivers from not-so-safe drivers, and technology can help there. And that helps the industry to tailor their offerings, reduce their overall cost. We're making technology available to do just that and try to do it in a cost-effective way. So we are collecting information from the CAN bus. I don't know if you're familiar with the technology, but we can collect data from straight from the vehicle. We profile that data and give an indication of the driving style, where drivers are going, what time of day and night they're driving, and so on and so forth. That helps. That helps to profile the risks. There are also some benefits for users, because users can also learn to improve their driving style, drive more eco-friendly, save money on fuel. There's some direct feedback mechanism where your driving style is compared to the average driving style, and so on and so forth. So it's an element of real safety and cost improvement. There's a marketing element as well. I don't want to deny that. And the strategic importance, of course, is that's a vast market. So the interest is for us to get this to work, learn from it, and try to expand that to a market that is in potential very, very large.
So I guess you've won just one contract in that space, Allianz, but you must be in ongoing discussions with other insurance companies in other geographies.
Yeah, it's not the first one. We've done more in the UK. I think we've spoken about it a year ago or three quarters of a year ago. That's ongoing. So there's continuous interest, continued development in that area. It's one of the things that we need to explore, we need to look at. It can grow, but it can also fall flat on its face. It's just too early to say, but there is potential. I think what works against us in that industry is that there's not a lot of profitability anyway, and the opportunity for price differentiation and further discount is very limited. But if we can prove that this technology can help, both in making driving safer or further segmentation and diversification of product offerings, I think we're onto something, but time will tell whether that will, what type of results that will yield for TomTom.
Perfect. And can I just have one last question? Just on licensing and location-based advertising, are you seeing growth in the number of new verticals interested in licensing maps at the moment, please?
No, I think in the consumer space, we find that our traditional customers find it increasingly difficult to compete with the three large ecosystems like Google, Apple, and Microsoft. So there's concentration taking place. So in a general sense, in that licensing environment, it's a fairly stable business. But it's not a business that I think will grow dramatically in the midterm. But there are some other verticals in the GIS space that show good growth and good potential, also for new applications. Government initiatives, local authorities for traffic, route planning, all sorts of modeling. Other applications that, until recently I haven't heard from before, show an interest of licensing our content and our technology and actually signing deals and are prepared to pay for that. So in the GIS market, there is a broader opportunity. And I think on balance, you know, I think the outlook for the licensing income, you know, is in the midterm fairly stable.
Thank you very much, Harold. Well done.
We will now take our next question from Mark Zwartsenberg of ING. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my questions. A couple of them left. First of all, on the expectations for the full year on your guidance top line, can you take me through the key assumptions, particularly for the consumer segment, going through the quarters to arrive at your at least 925 million target? Because it seems that if I look to last year, that there is a different seasonality perhaps in the second half. So can you perhaps dig in a bit on that? Second question is on automotive. How should we see the development of automotive in the second half of this year and going into next year in terms of also rolling off a bit the hardware component? That's my second question. And the last question is, can you give me a sense of the deferred revenue per share that's currently on the balance sheet? Thanks.
Let me talk firstly about the revenue outlook for the year. I think you're right. I mean, in the end, the biggest part of our revenue by quite a long way is consumer. And so it is consumer that is driving how, you know, we show the outlook. In the second half of last year, we had an uptick coming through from the introduction of lifetime maps, lifetime traffic, and we grew quite a lot of market share in the second half of last year. Now, this year we have managed to grow that a little bit more, but, you know, we, in looking forward to the rest of the year, we don't anticipate that we'll get that same uptick coming through again that gives you a kind of one-off lift up. We've performed very well so far this year. We're doing our absolute best to keep that going and keep going. But in the end, you know, the PND market is declining, albeit in Europe at a slightly lower rate than we've seen. And I think, you know, we have to expect that it will be very difficult for, you know, us to maintain that performance in the second half of the year. And so that, you know, that feeds into the guidance. So I think less seasonality than we saw, or less uplift in the second half in PND than we saw last year. As we've already said, our plan is to double sport revenue overall from the year. You know, we're starting off from a base last year of low tens of millions. But, you know, if we double it this year, it starts to get meaningful, and that bodes well for next year. So I think, you know, that's really the backdrop behind you know, the guidance for the rest of the year. Telematics will continue well, and while automotive and licensing will be flat to down a bit year on year.
But how would that consumer develop between Q3 and 4? Is Q3 then well below Q2, or to make at least Q4 as a seasonal stronger quarter be higher than Q3, or how should we see that?
Yeah, I mean, Q4 will be bigger than Q3. It is. But I'm just saying, you know, we won't get that uptick that we got last year from that big gain in market share.
Okay. Right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions?
Could you just repeat them? Thanks.
The automotive. How should we see automotive develop into the second half and into next year, also because of the roll-off of the hardware component and certain contracts and Peugeot coming on steam maybe later on? Can you give us a little bit of feel for that?
Yeah, I mean, what I expect overall for automotive for the year is that seasonally, Q3 is the smallest quarter in automotive, and that won't be any different this year. And as I said before, I expect overall for the full year our revenue to be a bit lower than it was last year. Flat to down a bit is where we expect it to come out. What's going on within that, you know, clearly our classification of automotive now does not, you know, include the hardware piece. The hardware piece is sitting within consumer, and that is getting smaller. On the content and services piece, you know, that's what's reflected in automotive, and as I said, you know, flat to slightly down. On the hardware contracts, you know, our main hardware contracts are with Renault, which is the biggest one. We also have business with Mazda, Fiat, and Toyota. And, you know, gradually the latter three of those in the kind of hardware form are reaching the ends of their lives, and they will kind of roll off over the next few periods. Renault will continue.
Okay. And then my last question, the deferred revenue per share?
Yeah, so deferred revenue in the balance sheet now I think is about 110 million, something 104 million, and it's, you know, on the 108 million, I beg your pardon, and it's grown from last year, it was 84 million from memory. So it's on the increase because of the fact that, you know, there is more lifetime maps and more lifetime traffic in the mix.
And if we would include that in fully in the P&L, what would be the impact on an EPS level?
I'd need to double-check that and get back to you, I'm sorry. I don't do that off the top of my head.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a significant amount, as you can see, coming through.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a final one. Can you give me the market size for the rest of the world, where it stands now?
For P&Ds?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll just need to look that up for you. I'll come back to you in a sec.
Okay. Yeah, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will now take our final question from Shanti Jha of eValueServe. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Hello.
Hi, go ahead, sir.
Yep. So just one from me. You have recently acquired GAMS Tracking in June, and just want to know whether you want to, you know, looking at further telematics deal going forward.
Yeah, so this is the second one that we acquired. So it's important for us that the integration of our first acquisition is going well according to plan. The combining of the two companies in Spain has led to accelerated growth, actually. So from a commercial perspective and from a transition perspective, we're happy with the results that we've achieved there. We're now starting the integration of our second company. We hope that will go as well. And we will continue to look for similar acquisitions, although I have to say that we are very picky and you know, it really needs to fit in our product portfolio and our customer portfolio. The price needs to be right and so on and so forth. But yes, if there are good opportunities to do similar things, we will look at that very carefully.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, operator. I would like to thank you all for joining us this afternoon. If you have any follow-up questions at a later time, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Thank you all very much, and operator, you can close the call.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.